This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. Joe Sachs wears two hats. On the weekends, he's an attending physician at the emergency room at Northridge Hospital Medical Center in Los Angeles. On weekdays, he's poring over scripts for the TV series ER, making sure that all the instruments and procedures and language and sounds are true to life and would take place in a real ER. Even though Joe Sachs got his job as medical technical advisor for ER through a chance meeting, he studied both medicine and filmmaking in college, thinking he would do training films for medical staff. In his spare time, he's a flight physician for Air Rescue International. Before we talk with Joe Sachs about bringing reality to a fictional series, let's listen to a scene from last week's show. A seriously ill child has been brought into the emergency room by his mother.
I've got a sick kid here.
Yeah.
He was asleep in his crib. I couldn't wake him up.
How long was he down?
2 minutes. Couldn't get my IV. Gave Effie down the tube.
All right.
Excuse me. Joe has a hypoplastic left heart. They put a Blaylock shunt in last month. He was doing fine.
Yeah, what's your name, ma'am?
Andrea Thompson.
Two, three.
I'm Carol Hathaway. This is Dr. Ross.
Give me an arm board and a 22-gauge angiocath. I'll start an IV.
The surgeon's name is Dr. Luce. His cardiologist is Ferris, and his pediatrician is Vargas.
Hook up a 12 lead and get an echo.
He's on DIG, Lasix, and potassium.
Cuny, would you escort Mrs. Thompson out of here?
Come on, sweetheart.
No, please, I want to stay. Carol?
All right, but you stay back there. We need to work.
I'm in bolus 100 of saline.
Did he cut off his shunt?
He may have. Blood gas kit.
What's that for?
Man, I don't have time to explain everything to you right now. She shouldn't be in here.
It's her child.
Tuna, get this up the lab.
I asked Joe Sachs how he choreographs a scene.
The first thing that has to happen, of course, is that we have to get all the supplies that we're going to need. So the prop department may get a list of 200 props that we have to obtain. Some we may have, some we may have to special order or get from manufacturers. The next thing that I need to do is meet with the director and just to go over the medical correctness of the scene, where the principal characters need to be standing to doing certain procedures. And once the director and I are on the same page, I then have to fill in all of the detail and all of the activity that goes on in the room. And that takes about 1 hour per every 40 seconds that you see on the air, the amount of pre-production work to choreograph the movement. In each of the two rooms, there are eight people approximately working on the patient. There's all of our regulars, and then there are background artists, some of whom are real nurses, to lend additional medical realism to the scene. So I'm choreographing all the movement, all the passing of instruments. So anytime you're seeing Dr. Ross examining the kid in front of his face, they're throwing up and setting IVs, and behind him somebody's running with an X-ray cassette to put under the child to take an X-ray. So all of that activity, all that crazy chaos that you see in our trauma and critical care scenes is choreographed to the very exact move, and everything is cued to the dialogue. Once I've choreographed what each person is doing in the room, it kind of looks like a conductor's score. And then each person gets an individual miniaturized script with all of their technical notes on the scene. So Dr. Ross knows when he says this line, he gets the scalpel from Hathaway. When he says this line, the chest tube is passed from Marquez, and he puts it in. And this really helps the actors because they're not really doctors. So they know exactly what they're doing every moment, every beat of the scene.
Well, I'm curious how much of a medical education you've given the actors and how much you demonstrate the correct way of passing a scalpel from one person to the other, or the correct way of leaning over a baby's body as you're doing some critical form of surgery?
It has to be done really, really fast because we do a lot of work. Our scripts are 80 pages long, which is about twice as long as your average one-hour television script because our pace is so fast. We have so much work to do in a day that I can't waste a lot of time rehearsing and instructing people. So everybody gets about 2 minutes with me before we get to the scene. And then we rehearse the scene maybe two or three times before we start shooting. So everybody has to learn very quickly. And often the featured aspects of the procedure don't involve the actual surgery and incisions on the body. The producers and the network obviously doesn't want to see that. We don't show a lot of blood and guts. But what we work on is the correctness of how people are handed and are handling surgical instruments. And, for instance, a scalpel may be passed through the frame. They'll use it. And when it comes back up to be passed back, it may be bloody. And that gives the impression that a procedure is done, where you're not going to actually see the skin splitting open on a patient.
What about being able to pronounce medical terms, not just correctly, but meaningfully?
I have to correct. And very often, a day or two before we get to a scene, I'll know what are the tough words that someone's going to say, and I'll just kind of go over them so they don't learn them incorrectly. We had a guest star on an upcoming show who has about a 60-second monologue of the most complex, complicated medical terms that he has to rattle off. And for him, I made a tape. I made an audio tape, and he studied that for 2 or 3 days, and he came in and just nailed it.
Well, since we're on the radio and I have a partial feeling for sounds, how much are just the sounds of an ER, or even maybe the sounds of a physician putting their hands inside someone's chest cavity, how important is that, you think, in creating an atmosphere of the ER?
Right. Very important. And after a show is edited, I'm very intimately involved in the sound mix for the medical sound effects and the additional background dialogue. The show is filmed with no sound except for the voices of the people who are talking. And when you look at a rough cut of ER, it feels very empty because all you hear is the dialogue. And then we have a fabulous post-production department who goes to work at creating a 48-track sound mix that includes all of the background activity of visitors talking, people talking, nurses talking, all the beeps and the boops of the medical equipment, all of the special sound effects, distant ambulances, wailing, intercoms, and it just really brings it to life. So sound's a very important part of the show.
Are there certain sounds you've had to make that are really the sounds of an ER, or perhaps the sounds of a particular kind of surgery that maybe you can't find on a CD collection?
Oh, yeah. We go to the real hospital and record the real machines and the real monitors. Most of the sound effects that you hear are the real actual medical noises that you would hear in a hospital, just as all of the medical props that you see are the real pieces of medical equipment that are really used in a hospital. I sometimes jokingly say that we're better stocked than many community hospitals are, and it's somewhat true. We could do major procedures and resuscitations right there on the soundstage at Warner Brothers.
Well, what have you found is the hardest procedure to try to recreate on ER? I mean, in certain ways, you want to make it as real as possible, but you do have to think about the camera.
Well, we tend not to feature the real gore and guts of the procedures that are being done on the patient's body. The frame of the camera stays a little bit above it, so we don't have to detail all of that work. So it's a very easy question to answer as to what the hardest procedure to do on camera is, and that's putting on surgical gloves.
Really? Now, why is that?
There's nothing harder than that, because that's something that there's no cheating, there's no hiding. You know, when you take your scalpel or you take your forceps and you dive down below frame, it doesn't matter what you're doing. You know, you could be finger painting down there and no one would know the difference. But when you have a nurse holding out gloves and you got to pop your hand right into it and come up and look like you've done it a million times in your life, and inevitably when we're doing a scene where someone has to glove up, they'll put their hand down and they'll come up with the thumb and the index finger and the pinky and the middle one, and then there'll be two little bunny rabbit ears sticking up that don't have any fingers in them at all, and we have to cut the camera.
So then it's back to the practice.
So putting
session.
On, yes, putting on gloves is a really difficult skill, and few people understand that.
Well, what are the medical staff doing below the frame? And it's true, in ER, most of what is going on is implied, and you don't see serious surgery right in the camera, but right below the camera, of course, their hands are out of the camera's eye. Are they doing anything? Are they just...
Oh, sure, they're doing. They're I teach them the proper moves that they would be doing, because we see their forearm and we see their upper arm, and it has to look like they're sewing or pushing or sliding a tube in. So the upper body moves are all correct. The detail of exactly what they're doing with their fingers and at the end of the surgical instruments is not seen.
Joe Sachs is an emergency room physician and medical technical advisor for the TV series ER. We'll talk more after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Joe Sachs is a medical technical advisor to the TV program ER. He's also an emergency room physician. Let me ask you about your own decision to be an emergency room physician. What was it that made you want to specialize in that?
Well, I love it. I love working simple? In emergency departments. Yeah, it's there's a couple of reasons why. I think if you ask anyone, you know, if you ask the first violinist in the New York Philharmonic, well, why do you play the violin? You know, why are you doing that? There's a love for what you do, and I really love working in an emergency department. There's two aspects of it. One is the cognitive or intellectual aspect. People come in off the street with a problem, and you really have to use all of your problem-solving skills to come up with a diagnosis. And I enjoy that part of it, to be the on the front line. The other part of it is the interpersonal part of the fact that strangers are coming in, and you have to walk into a room and develop an instant rapport with them, put them at ease. They're nervous. They have a perceived emergency. They're afraid. Their family's there. They're concerned. And there's really a very magical moment where you can go into the room, kind of break through all that, relax people, put them at ease, make them laugh. And that for me is very rewarding. So there's the two aspects of that I really enjoy. And then the third aspect is that emergency medicine, unlike some of the other specialties, gives you a lot of flexibility in terms of pursuing other interests. You work shifts in the emergency department. So your schedule is known in advance. You don't have to have a beeper. You're not called back to the hospital. You're not on call. So many emergency physicians have and pursue other interests. And for me, had I not been in the specialty of emergency medicine, I wouldn't be able to devote as much time as I can to the show and still keep my hand in clinical medicine.
When you're working in the real ER, the real emergency room, do you sometimes say to yourself, oh, okay, I got to remember this and perhaps incorporate it on the show ER?
Absolutely. In fact, most of our stories come from real emergency department experiences with real patients. We change them and we modify them to protect the innocent. And no one's story is ever told verbatim. But certainly interesting situations, conflicts, dilemmas, hilarious moments, I do make notes of. And sometimes they'll end up in a distorted form on the show. But I think it's just like any writer. You have life experiences, and when something happens to you, you're
gonna use them.
You decide to use it.
Yeah. Last year, you wrote one of the shows, A Shift in the Night, and this was about an all-nighter that Dr. Green pulled in the emergency room. Was that based on a night of yours?
It was an amalgam of several nights. There are some nights where you are inundated and overwhelmed by patients and by the healthcare system, and no matter what you do trying to take a step forward, you get pushed back several steps, and it's really frustrating. You try and you try to do the right thing, and perhaps somebody's managed care organization or HMO doesn't want the patient admitted to the hospital, so you have to kind of do battle with that. You want to admit patients to the hospital, but there are no beds. You want to take care of people, but you're just overwhelmed and you're feeling bad because people are waiting a long time and they're getting angry. And sometimes you just wish you could wave a magic wand and take care of everyone without all the red tape of the system. And that's kind of what the episode was about. And it was a basis of it was based on two things, one of which was the day of the big earthquake in Southern California. The Northridge earthquake had its epicenter at the hospital where I work.
Wow.
So Instead of seeing 100 or 150 patients a day, we saw 500 patients that day. The electricity was out. The backup power was on. And we saw 500 patients with more efficiency and with shorter waiting times than we normally do because there were no charts, there was no registration. We were set up outside to do virtually all wound care, including suturing, in the parking lot. And to get inside, you needed to be really sick or need an x-ray. So I kind of had an epiphany when I was working there on the day of the earthquake and putting a cast on somebody's leg, and I looked at their little slip at what time they had signed in outside at the in the parking lot. And in less than an hour, they had been seen, been examined, had their x-ray taken, been casted, and had their prescription for pain medicine, which is pretty much unheard of on a normal day. You can often wait an hour just to make your chart and have your personal data entered into the computer. So this episode was about cutting through all the red tape, and Dr. Green did a heroic thing, which is when the emergency department was gridlocked, when nothing was going right. He went out to the waiting room with a few doctors and a few nurses and just saw and took care of as many people as he could right out there in the waiting room.
How did you get this job?
It was pure chance. It was pure chance. I actually came on the show halfway through the first season. And my entree to the show was a phone call to the hospital where I work that came well before the show was on the air. One of the writer producers, whose name is Paul Manning, was doing his research, just talking to real emergency physicians, well before the show was on the air. And he happened to call the hospital where I work, and the person he talked to put him in touch with me. So we got to talking, and I told him a little bit about my background. At that time, Dr. Lance Gentile, who's still on the writing staff, was with the show and was trying to cover the set at the same time that he was attending writing meetings, and that proved to be impossible. So my initial role and responsibility was that actors and writers would come to the real ER and kind of hang out with me just to get a feel for how things work and the vibe and the lingo and the interactions that, that go on. And then halfway through the first season, Lance was just overwhelmed between writing and trying to cover the set, and it became clear that they needed someone like me on the set all the time.
Have you ever appeared in one of the scenes in the background?
Yeah, I actually had a speaking part.
Did you really? Yeah. What was that part?
I think I've been on the air about 3 times. There was a show called Motherhood in the first season that was written by Lydia Woodward, one of our executive producers, and directed by Quentin Tarantino. And in that episode, there was a patient who had a cardiac and respiratory arrest while eating at an all-you-can-eat buffet. And I was the paramedic who brought him in. So I came running down the hall, giving the bullet, as we say, explaining exactly what was wrong with him until we transferred him on the bed in the trauma room. And this particular patient had aspirated or inhaled his partial denture plate. And Dr. Lewis had to go fishing for that and pull out a partial plate of dentures from his windpipe.
Was that a thrill for you? To play somebody?
It was all right. There was a tremendous amount of ribbing from the actors and the crew because normally I'm in the position where I'm always going in and correcting them and giving them advice. And I'm sure there are times when they resent that. So on the first take, when I perhaps didn't do my delivery as quickly or as sparkling as the director wanted it, Eric LaSalle was all over me, giving me a hard time, trying to get me to screw up. But we did 2 takes of the scene coming down the hall. They printed the second one, and that was it. So I was proud of my performance.
Well, you have a show coming up in May, one that you wrote called Make a Wish. Is there anything you can tell us about it?
Well, I wrote the story, and Lydia Woodward wrote the teleplay. And it is the second-to-last show of the year. And for those of you who are following the show and watch the show, they know that Peter Benton's girlfriend, Carla, is pregnant. Right. And this is the show where the baby's born. So a great deal of the show focuses on that.
Well, Joe Sachs, thank you very much for joining us today on Fresh Air.
Thank you for having me.
Joe Sachs is an emergency room physician and a medical technical advisor for the TV series ER.